Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Are you aware of the fact that cosmetic surgery is now becoming a major preoccupation for many men? That's right. Even as cosmetic and aesthetic surgical procedures have really grown in popularity among women, growing not only in terms of numbers, but in terms of the age span with younger and younger women, even now teenage girls, taking advantage of these procedures, but now to men as well. We're going to be talking today about what it means to live in a society as Christians and try to think through what it would mean for men to feel the imperative to have cosmetic surgery. Now, the issue is larger than just men, but something significant is going on when this becomes something that catches the media's attention. Not only the media's attention, but of course those who are marketing these kinds of services to men. The implication is if you don't look a certain way, if the age begins to show, you're just not going to be able to keep pace. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. It is inevitable on this day that we'd be talking about what happened last night in the Iowa caucuses. And finally, our dance of democracy gets down to where there are actual votes cast. In this case, not a primary, but a caucus, where you had people coming to designated places on both parties. The rules require people to be present. On the Democratic side, you had 240,000 people turn out, almost twice as in any previous caucus and virtually twice as many as the Republicans. It was a huge night in terms of historic consequence, especially, I would argue, on the Democratic side. Senator Barack Obama of Illinois walked away with what can only be categorized as an astounding victory. Not only did he win, he won convincingly. Not only did he won with every considerable cohort of the electorate there in Iowa, with the exception of elderly women. Hillary Clinton won the elderly vote rather comprehensively. But Hillary Clinton did not come in second. She came in third. And so what you have on the Democratic side is a big rewriting of the entire situation. The landscape of the Democratic Party's presidential nomination race is now completely changed. And not only that, but with the New Hampshire primary coming just 5 days from the Iowa caucuses, and that's about 3 media days, by the way, there's very little time for any reshaping of this race. And so all of a sudden, the momentum has shifted to Senator Barack Obama. And that's going to require us all to be looking more carefully, more directly at his positions and all the rest. He is running for the Democratic presidential nomination now, has gained enormous momentum toward that prize, has certainly robbed Senator Clinton of the sense of inevitability about her nomination, and actually put Senator Clinton in the position in which it may be rather difficult for her to regain any momentum toward the nomination. We'll be watching what takes place in New Hampshire, of course. But on the Republican side, also a very big victory for former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee. The kind of victory that he had been hoping for and the kind of victory that his primary opponents had probably feared. Because after all, spending very little money, he ended up with another very convincing victory, similar to that of Senator Obama. In the case of Governor Huckabee, however, even as he gains incredible momentum, national stature by this victory, looking forward, the situation on the Republican side is still pretty cloudy, and you could foresee the possibility of a McCain-Romney head-to-head, of a Romney-McCain head-to-head, of a McCain-Huckabee head-to-head race, and out there lurking, waiting for the Florida primary and for February 5 is former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani. Now, I want to come back to where I was before, and before the votes have been cast, and as we were looking at this, and just remind us that this is an opportunity for evangelicals to grow up, to mature a bit in terms of our political engagement, because the situation just is not easy. And even as conservative Christians have been voting largely in sync with the Republican Party in recent years because of the alignment of the Republican Party and Christians on a good number of concerns, abortion at the top of that list, not the only on that list, but at the top of that list, that situation is going to be radically reshaped if the Republican Party nominates a pro-choice candidate like Rudy Giuliani. Otherwise, there are a host of other issues ranging from positions on specific questions to the electability factor that are going to really have to be considered by evangelicals in making the vote. But no doubt, going into New Hampshire, even as on the Democratic side, there's now the sense that Barack Obama becomes the candidate to beat. On the Republican side, that's where Governor Huckabee really is. Now, the New Hampshire electorate is probably less friendly. One of the interesting things that happened last night in Iowa is that the myth of the death of the religious right, so to speak, as the media often calls it, has been really put to death. I mean, there is no such thing. It may be that the evangelical electorate is changing, but certainly in terms of influence, the idea that conservative Christians are a smaller part of the electorate, that really was put to the test and it failed. Let me give you an example. Back in the year of 2000, when President George W. Bush was then candidate Texas Governor George W. Bush, 36% of those who participated in the Republican caucuses in Iowa identified themselves as conservative Christians. This year, last night, fully 60% of all the Republicans who showed up for the caucuses identified themselves as evangelical Christians. Not exactly the same terminology, but basically the same kind of label. That's very significant. And the national media have been talking about how conservative Christians were waning in influence in the Republican Party. Well, at least not in Iowa. Not when it came to the core of support for Governor Huckabee. We'll be watching New Hampshire with you. But I want to come back again to just remind us that the ultimate question for us is not who is president of the United States, for evangelical Christians. We understand that that's a very important issue. As a matter of fact, it's hard to overestimate the earthly, historic importance of the American presidency. But at the end of the day, Jesus Christ will be Lord regardless of who sits in the Oval Office. And evangelicals had better understand that our most important citizenship is not in this country, but in heaven. However, while we are on this earth, we need to be grateful, those of us who are in America, that we're in a country that is going through this democratic process in a way that is stable and responsible and peaceful. Just look at the kind of electoral chaos that led to terror and tragedy in Pakistan and in Kenya just over the last several days. And you'll see another reason to be very thankful for the political stability of the United States of America. After all, our Constitution is the world's longest-lasting political charter. And that's something for which we should be thankful. The New Statesman in Great Britain is out with a very interesting report that parallels something discovered also here in the United States. And that is that the polling data often just doesn't add up. Very, very interestingly, there is a pattern that comes down to this. Individuals say that they are optimistic about their own future. They are largely satisfied with their own situation. And yet they go on to say they think the culture is moving in the wrong direction. Now, this is very interesting when you play it out in economic terms. The New Statesman reports that the vast majority of people in Great Britain say that they believe that their own economic future is positive. And yet they think that the economic future for others is negative. Now, clearly we have a problem. If the vast majority of people all think that their situation is getting better, and yet they agree that everyone else's situation is getting worse, something's wrong. Now, that just doesn't add up. But it says something about the power of perception. And both in the United States and in Great Britain, there is something to this power of perception that we need to keep in mind. Politicians are worried about it. They're going after votes. Marketers are worried about it. They're going after consumers. Just about everyone is worried about this because perception can become reality. But when you start looking at this, the New Statesman is onto something. The title of the article is Why Life is Good. The opening sentence is this: a dangerous gap exists between our personal experience, which is mainly happy, and our view of a society in decline. Now, you could look at that and say, well, it could certainly be possible that the society is in a decline, but we are personally happy. But when you look at the actual data, it's not just that the society is in a decline. It's that the assumption of these people is that the situation economically, politically, culturally, in terms of family and sociology is actually getting worse. But they go on to say, in numbers that are simply defy the imagination, that that their situation is good and getting better. Reading from the article, it says this: hand in hand with the rise of individualism, we've seen the decline of industrial and pre-industrial collectivist institutions, including the organized church, trade unions, political parties, and municipal elites. So what this goes on to say is that the more isolated people are, the more likely they are to think that their situation is positive, but the situation at large is negative. Now, that may be why, if you're actively involved in a local church, you're less likely to feel this way. Because, after all, you're going to be in communion and in conversation with people whose worldview is going to be rather congruent with your own. However, if you are an isolationist, and if your worldview is limited to individualism, then you're likely to say, here's my situation, I assume that everyone else is in much more desperate straits. Of course, the media also play a part in this, with constant news of accidents, disasters, crime trends, and all the rest. It's easy to sit in a chair, watch the television, and extrapolate that to a civilization on the brink. Study like this is important to remind us that we are at least accountable that our perceptions be grounded in some reality. This is the Albert Mohler Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 877-8-GOLD-101.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We are a society that puts a premium on looks, that is, physical appearance. That's hardly new. All you have to do is just to reflect upon the history of Western art to recognize that a premium on physical beauty is probably as old as Genesis 3. At the same time, there are options for people living now in the advanced economies of the industrial West that had never existed before. And now we have an entire field of elective, plastic, aesthetic, and cosmetic surgery. Now, on this program, from time to time, we have looked at this question mostly with regard to women, because the vast majority of those who are electing these procedures are women. And the reality is that even as physical beauty is considered a cultural premium, that is, has been, at least in the past, attached far more to women than to men. Women have felt, in many cases, obviously, that they had to improve or enhance or extend their physical beauty, or they would have a lower sense of worth or be considered no longer as worthy as a mate, as a person, as a leader, as an individual. And certainly at this point, it's now taken for granted that there is something like a constitutional right in this country to have access to many of these cosmetic procedures. Troubling issues there. And we've been looking at these troubling issues. From a Christian worldview perspective, the whole idea of cosmetic surgery to enhance physical beauty is very problematic. I mean, all you have to do is be even slightly familiar with the book of Proverbs and the wisdom literature of the Old Testament to be reminded that the Bible identifies two different forms of beauty, a true, enduring inner beauty and the outer beauty. And the outer beauty can lie. It's the inner beauty that is far more important. A true beauty is a matter of character rather than a matter of bodily appearance. But when you start looking at how many Christians are engaging this issue, it's clear that many of them see this basically as a consumer choice. But what we're talking about today is how this has now spread to men. Newsweek magazine is out with a brand new article on this, and guess what? It's written by two women, Jennifer Barrett and Karen Springen. I think it's very interesting that two women, indeed, have written this article, and they're suggesting that men are now a prime market for cosmetic surgery as well. Listen to this. They begin their report with this anecdote. When he was young, Steve Goldrum thought plastic surgery was uniquely a female pursuit. Quote, I remember going to high school and girls were getting nose jobs all the time, says the 57-year-old interior designer. But guys didn't get their noses done back then. In fact, most men didn't get any kind of a cosmetic procedure done back then. Or if they did, they sure didn't talk about it. Well, whether they're talking about it or not, they are getting it. As a matter of fact, in 2006, nose reshaping, liposuction, and eyelid and facelifts were all among the top 10 cosmetic surgery procedures for men. I've just been looking at those top 10 cosmetic procedures. Number one is Botox injections for a wrinkled forehead. Number two is hair removal. Number three is hair transplantation. Different parts of the body involved here. Men having hair removed from their necks and their backs, and then having hair transplanted also to their scalps. But next is liposuction for love handles and all the rest. This is really, really strange stuff. What is going on when men feel like they have to have these procedures? Now, let me read to you another part of this report from Newsweek. It says this. Wrinkles used to make a man more distinguished, while a little weight around the middle seemed a rite of passage for married, middle-aged men and a sign of a well-fed husband. Not so in today's youth-oriented, age-defying society. Quote, men are now feeling the pressure that women were feeling before. They think, unless I look young, I won't be able to compete in the marketplace. End quote. Well, what does it say about us that so many men feel the need to have these aesthetic cosmetic procedures done? What does it say to us that we accept that our worth must be determined by our physical beauty? How do we establish these standards anyway? And why is young better than old? I have to tell you, I think a lot of it has to do with the denial of the inevitability of age. Some of it has to do with the fact that in this culture we have turned reality upside down, and now youth drive the wisdom rather than those who are older. You also have a situation in which health is supposed to be now a matter of visibility. In other words, we now have an imperative towards being healthy, and we have to look healthy as well. Therefore, you can't have a wrinkled scalp and forehead. You can't have drooping eyelids because you might not look healthy. And if you don't look healthy, then you just might not get the job. You just might not get elected to office. You might not get that promotion. You might not get that spouse. What does it say that all of a sudden this has shifted from women on now also to men? No less for women, but now including more and more men. Dr. Michael McGuire, vice president of the American Society of Plastic Surgeons, says this, a lot of baby boomer men are at the age now when changes are more significant and there's a greater acceptance of plastic surgery. Now, most of the things listed in the top 10 I can mention, but let me mention to you that there are a good number of procedures for men that I'm not about even to mention on this program, which says that now for men as well as for women, sex is also involved in this, and the idea of men as sex objects. You know, there's just something perverse about a culture that now devotes so much of its energy to the way we look, even to the point of re-sculpting and transforming our bodies to deny that we're actually who we are. Getting older. It's considered a compliment to tell people they look younger than they are. But now that's reached the point of something of cultural perversity when admitting that we are as old as we look is now considered to be some kind of liability. You know, in the Bible, it talks about respect towards those who have the white and gray hair, which is, after all, a tribute to their wisdom. Well, now the tribal elders are having to give way to the teenagers who are determining the entertainment and much of the rest of the culture as well. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. How are you going to talk about this? Is this a matter of your Christian concern? Or do you think we should just ignore this as an issue and assume that Christians as well as others can simply join willingly into this game of aesthetic plastic surgery? What does it say about our notion of beauty? What does it say about our understanding of age? What does it say about our understanding of what it means to grow older, if we're going to try to defy it? What does it say about the fact that we, even many Christians, would trade inner beauty for outer beauty? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. The Orange County Register has an article similarly themed. It's by Colin Stewart, and it suggests that notions of how American women, and to a lesser extent men, are supposed to look are changing as fast as medical technology allows. You see, that's also very, very interesting. It's not just that we are defying age by trying to look younger. We are also trying to enhance physical appearance in ways that are not normal even for the young. I mean, you have women who are just having breast augmentation surgery and having their lips reshaped and all the rest, and you have men doing similar things in ways that establish a new norm. And that's what's really interesting. In other words, the way we come from the womb and the way we develop physically over time and as we age is no longer considered the norm. Now you have a new norm, but it's not a norm of our genes and chromosomes. It's a norm of aesthetic surgery. The Orange County Register also talks about the pressure put on young girls in high school in particular to achieve this kind of a look where they just aren't considered beautiful. Now it's not only the teenage girls, but also the boys. What are you going to say when your teenage son comes home and says, hey, I need this or I need that. I just don't like the way I look. The phone number 877-893-8255. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
Listening to the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmueller.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Let's go to Missy calling from Crestwood, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Go ahead. Go ahead, Missy.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. Thank you for having me. I just had a quick comment. I'm 47 years old, and just in the last year, I had noticed some lines and some wrinkles and made a comment to my husband that it would be really nice to have maybe some Botox or a little bit of work done. And he commented back to me, being a Christian husband, and said that would be totally going against how the Lord designed us. And we're supposed to just grow old gracefully. And I said, okay. And I'm just going to just stick with what he said and just know that God created us to grow old.
You know, Missy, I think your husband did a couple of very effective things there. Number one, he clearly validated his love for you and the fact that he loves you, wrinkles and all. And by the time all of us reach about this age, and I'm about the same age you are, yeah, these things begin to show. But I think he also had a good biblical perspective there. Let me just remind us of what Solomon writes in Proverbs 31:30. He writes, charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Now, what's really interesting to me, Missy, is that this has shifted not only from women, but now to men. Let me just ask you this. You're looking at your husband. I assume he's about the same age you are. Certainly, he's showing signs of age as well. Would you want him to get cosmetic surgery?
Oh, absolutely not. I think he's more handsome now than when I met him over 20 years ago.
Well, that's a very sweet word. But the interesting thing is there are people who simply don't feel that way. This Newsweek magazine article cites a man who says, if I don't do this, I can't keep up. I want to quote him directly. This is Alan Horowitz, a 59-year-old residential realtor from Morristown, New Jersey. He had a $20,000 mini facelift. I don't know what a mini facelift is. I guess it's something less than the full facelift. But anyway, he says, when you feel good about the way you look, it changes your whole personality, your whole outlook on life and how people perceive you. You have 2 minutes to connect with a client. You want to look as sharp and good as you can. Another man here says, unless I look young, I won't be able to compete in the marketplace. Now, that's pretty straightforward language. And it's new because men have not been held to this kind of standard before. I think it's a false standard, an artificial standard. I think it's an unbiblical standard. I think it's a very dangerous standard. To join the conversation, call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You know, some time ago on this program, I talked about all these procedures that women are having to assist their hands, their hand lifts. And the whole point of this is that women were feeling like their hands were looking old. And I just wanted to point out that I see that as a matter of real honor for a woman. And you think about a woman's hands doing all that labor, changing all those diapers, fixing all those meals, washing all those dishes, doing all the things that a woman in the household does, much less out in the larger world. You realize it takes faithfulness to get hands like that. And I think we should honor hands like that. I think the idea that a woman should have to get a hand lift in order to validate her is an insult to the very love and toil and life she has lived that would produce those hands. And again, the Bible does look at this very differently. The Bible looks at gray hair as a mantle of gray hair, as a mantle of honor. But we often look at it as something that's almost exactly the opposite. This article from the Orange County Register is really haunting to me because it points out something that at least in California, it may be a little bit different, maybe more exaggerated than in other parts of the country, where you are surrounded by younger people, it may be that there is even more of an imperative that is perceived by people along these ways. But Newport Beach dermatologist Dory Gilbert says, listen to this. People start with Botox injections in their 30s. It picks up steam in the 40s, peaks in the 40s and 50s, and tapers off in the 60s. She says 50 is the line. 80 is the new 50. People think that 50 is not old, but anything over 50 is old. So they want to establish the fact that they want to look young at 50 in order to look younger as they get older. Listen to this. This is, again, a dermatologist. This is a doctor, the author of, and owner of a spa retreat in Lake Forest, California. Says this, I see a lot of women in my office now who are 30, but they're worried. They are totally worried. They don't want to look like they're 50, and they're going to start now. Gonna start now. Yeah, that's really interesting. So what do you do if you start now? You have to keep up going into the future? When does someone admit, you know, this is my body. It's pretty much what it is. It's not going to get younger. It's going to get older. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Another moral aspect to this is the fact that there are limited resources in this economy, in this medical economy, for procedures. What does it mean when much-needed critical procedures have to compete for operating room time and all the rest with aesthetic procedures? What does that mean in terms of Christian stewardship? Back with those issues and your discussion in just a moment. This is the Albert Miller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Moeller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 877-8-GOLD-101.
Welcome back to the Albert Moeller Program. We're talking about a Christian understanding of this whole idea of cosmetic surgery. And that we're clearly talking here not about reconstructive surgery after an accident. We're talking about here elective aesthetic surgery. People saying, I just don't like this. I'd like to have a different nose. I'd like to have a different neck. And many other things we're not even going to talk about on this program that are also involved in these elective procedures. It's a multi-billion dollar business. There are doctors who go to medical school to do residencies to specialize not in making people well, but in making them look what is perceived to be better, more attractive. I think that's a fascinating cultural development in itself. Let's go to Jim calling from Asheville, North Carolina, listening on WFGW. Go ahead, Jim.
Hi, good evening. Yes, I can understand this perfectly, and I'll tell you why. From my standpoint, I'm 67. I'm a professional actor, and I currently look older than 67. So I'm kind of limited in the kind of roles that I get. Although I get lots of work, I'm limited because I have to play people who are in their 70s, maybe older. A little nip and tuck around the eyes and the neck, and I can go back to 50, and it broadens my scope dramatically. The only thing holding me up is it's a very, very physical role. Then, of course, I still have a bit of a challenge. But that broadens my scope dramatically. And it's very minimal. It's all perception.
Now, let me ask you, Jim, this is fascinating because I wouldn't have thought of this angle, perhaps, if you hadn't called. What do you see as the moral or Christian worldview implications of this picture as you're having to think it through in your own individual situation?
I actually don't think there's anything wrong with it. I mean, I'm not cloning somebody. I mean, this is purely an act to lengthen my career. And I think that's a good thing. It's certainly good for my family.
Well, I appreciate your call, Jim, and you have added something to this discussion. And I do think when you start looking at plastic and reconstructive surgery, even as we were coming out of this break, I want to make the point that there sometimes is the need for such surgery after an accident, after another surgery that may have left a scarring or some kind of malformation. And there may be in other situations in which you'd have to rethink some of this. I got a call from a parent not too long ago who said that, due to an abnormality in their daughter's situation, they didn't feel that she, felt comfortable in public. They had it taken care of. You know, I see that as a different situation. But I am troubled. And Jim, I believe you would be too when you start considering that one of the most requested, and I want to say this, and there's no way to do it but to say it just out as I'm going to say it here, one of the most requested graduation gifts reported last year by a poll of high school senior girls was breast augmentation surgery. I find that very, very troubling. Jim, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Philip calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA.
Hey, Dr. Moeller. I think this is a desperate attempt to suppress the truth that we're all going to die. This is not about providing for family or for our job or for anything else or feeling good. This is the fact that he's appointed to a man to die once and then the judgment. And we're the pinnacle of God's creation. We're beautiful in his image. And for us to tamper with that, it just shows our fallenness.
Well, you know, Philip, I think there's a lot to what you have to say there. I think we want to deny death. I think that's a major part of human rebellion against God. We want to look death in the face and say, I'm going to deny you. And so we try to do that as long as we possibly can. And one of the most difficult places to deny aging, which leads to death, is in the mirror. And I think it's very easy for us to do just what you're suggesting, to look in the mirror and say, I simply don't want to look as old as I am. I don't want to see those signs of age. And, you know, some of this can just become almost, just pathetic. Now, I don't know all that's going on with a character such as Michael Jackson. I think at the very least we can say he's a very conflicted soul. But it was interesting that, after all, this is a man who's changed his appearance multiple times from his childhood until the present. And I don't keep up with this kind of thing, but saw a very serious news report that came out just this week indicating that he was spotted in California with bandages on his face. Again, the speculation that he's had even more surgery. And one news article I looked at said it might be surgery to reverse the negative impact of previous cosmetic surgeries. Now, that's another fascinating thing. This Orange County Register article points out that there are a good many surgical procedures that can take place that have to be revisited. And there's a warning to men saying here that if you have a facelift done at a certain time, you may have to have it redone because with receding hair, the scar lines from the facelift will show. So you got to move it up. You know, that's the interesting thing. Philip, here's the thing. We are going to die. We're all going to die. And we're pretty much going to die on schedule. Having, you know, cosmetic surgery may take us from looking like 60 to looking like 40, but we're still going to die like 60. And so that's a very interesting aspect of our humanity. Thank you for your call, Philip. Let's go to Fritz calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Go ahead, Fritz.
Yes, Dr. Muller, thanks for taking my call. I think the Bible says, and I think it said in reference to Saul, King Saul, it says man looks at the outward appearance, but God looks at the heart. And I find it really interesting, too, that there's virtually no physical descriptions of any Bible characters at all. We don't have any physical description of our Lord, none of the apostles, nothing. You know, you get incidental references to physical image. But where it does, you know, you quoted one of them, it places a higher value on character and inner beauty and absolutely no value on physical appearance. So I think that's what, as Christians, that's what we need to keep in mind, that the heart is the issue.
I think that reflects a great deal of biblical consideration, Fritz. Another really good contribution to this conversation. And you're exactly right. The scripture is very clear about this. And as a matter of fact, you mentioned Christ. The one thing it does tell us about Christ's experience is what Isaiah tells us, and that is that he was not physically attractive. He had an appearance from which one would turn his face, speaking specifically of the cross there. But it's not about prettiness. It's about beauty. Now, at my website at albertmuller.com, I have written several articles on a Christian understanding of beauty. We're going to link those with the radio program today. And one of the things I point out is that we are so easily seduced by the pretty and we miss the beautiful. And that's why I'm going to make an audacious claim here, but I promise you it's true. From a Christian worldview perspective, the reality of a beautiful woman's face, because she's beautiful in character, is far more beautiful than the airbrushed, surgically augmented picture of the cover girl in the fashion magazine. One's real, one's not. And the Christian worldview says what's real is more beautiful than what's false. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Let's go to Stephen calling from Shreveport, Louisiana.
Dr. Mueller, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Stephen. Go right in.
Yes, sir. I think really the problem is the gospel that we're preaching in modern America. When we're talking about your best life now and how everything is really temporally based, really about the things of this world, about the external, about the prosperity, I think it's really just a product of that.
Stephen, I think that's a profound point. And if we really are telling people that their main goal and the point of the gospel is to achieve happiness in this life, then we're playing right into that. And as you know, there are a lot of people on theology and on television today whose theology comes right down to that. And with their grins and their white smiles, they're communicating that kind of a message. Wonderful point, Stephen. I really do appreciate the call. Ideas have consequences. And when we start looking at this pattern of cosmetic surgery among men as well as among women, this is a consequence of a series of ideas. Let's go back to the Bible for a moment. Let's remember that in the book of Ecclesiastes, Solomon writes of one particular word which certainly has to play into our consideration here, and that word is vanity. All is vanity, says Solomon as he looks around and he sees human beings acting with the idiocy of the human condition. And by the way, Solomon realizes that one of the ways we are relieved of that kind of vanity is by the recognition that we're going to die. He writes in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, beginning with that famous passage that you see even on greeting cards about a time for everything. And he comes down and says, he has made everything appropriate in its time. He also has set eternity in their heart so that man will not find out the work which God has done from the beginning even to the end. Skipping on down, he says this. I said to myself concerning the sons of men, God has surely tested them in order for them to see that they are but beasts. For the fate of the sons of men and the fate of beasts is the same. As one dies, so dies the other. Indeed, they all have the same breath, and there's no advantage for man over beast, for all is vanity. All came from dust, and all return to dust. Now, that's not the end of the book of Ecclesiastes, because after all, Solomon comes to understand that all human wisdom leads to this kind of despair. All human wisdom leads to this kind of vanity. But we are rescued from this by the wisdom of God, through the revelation of Scripture, and, of course, through the fulfillment of all things in the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ. The most important thing here is that we realize that beauty is not something that we can necessarily see with the eyes. You know, the Bible does recognize physical beauty, but it never makes it a premium. As a matter of fact, it warns that it can be seductive and it can be misleading. We are told that Satan was a beautiful angel. That should be significant warning to us as we think through our contemporary cultural preoccupation with beauty. We're really going after pretty and missing that which is most beautiful. Back next week for Intelligent Christian Conversation. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.